Thanks very much, and I very much enjoyed that, and I'm sure a number of people have questions for you.
Lynette Jordan, Community Development.
John Coggins, former Vice Principal for Medicine and Life Sciences, now a Vice Principal focusing on community engagement, public engagement, and so forth. I've got some interesting questions for you on the Beacon Initiative.
I'm Rob Purcell from the other Education Department.
I'm Lee Mackay from the Lifelong Learning Academy at the University of the West of Scotland.
Edmund Jurzik, postgrad course teaching adults here at Glasgow University.
I'm Dave Beck, I manage the community development programmes here.
I'm Dale Goulet, I'm a PhD student here.
I'm Graham Hare from the Electronics and Electrical Engineering in the Music Technology Research Group.
Hi, I'm Bill Wardle, formerly College Principal and member of the Scottish Funding Council.
Hi, I'm Mark Pollard, Music from the University of Melbourne.
Josh Wilson from Edinburgh Napier University, I look after community engagement.
And Bill Wilson from the University of Glasgow.
So yes, I'll open up to questions now. John, do you want to kick off since you had a... You indicated you had a question.
I shouldn't be more fenced in declaring sort of direct interest because you were talking about the scheme across the UK where there are six beacons, five in one Scotland. They are incredibly diverse in what they're doing, but I understood, and I was involved in some of the decision making in this, that one of the key things was to get a culture change among academics, because the feeling was that you were not really going to enter this public engagement field well unless you rewarded academics for being involved, and that seemed to be one of the difficulties in this. And the universities, I mean, take your own university, you know, I should declare a second interest. I'm a member of the BBSRC Council, who fund two huge research institutes that are your neighbours in the UEA, and we have given those two organisations a huge push to get into public engagement. And we like to think, and you may not agree with this, that this has had a positive influence on UEA, basically, that in fact this is getting joined up, and the new hospital in Norwich is also working on the same line. So we feel that what was needed was a push, in this case from the research councils, to get the started off, but you may have a different view. But some of the other centres, sort of Manchester, for example, is completely different in relation. Bristol is completely different in relation. Edinburgh is a different organisation. Interestingly, in Edinburgh, they have really taken on the social sciences, whereas the other places have focused rather more on the sciences, which is interesting because Edinburgh is very strong in science, but they've chosen to go that way. I think it's terribly interesting that universities have really come to this kind of late in the day, that they've not been very logical in your case histories that you were developing, or how our thoughts, particularly the Scottish cases that were developed, or that have been developed. But in fact, the reasons for this are not hard to find, because in many institutions, management has not really pushed this agenda in the past. I mean, management has frequently had its own agenda. The RAE, for example, distorted thinking in quite a lot of places. And I think that's a worry. So I wonder whether you see from the six examples of the Beacons project, how do you see this is going to be brought together to influence the whole business of embeddedness in the community? Because they're all so different, and they're all doing things in such a different way. And I have to say, you're probably aware of this, that the funding councils have said there won't be a second round of funding. Which personally, I think it's a disaster. That's a lot of against this, but that's the reality. So I've taken rather a lot of time to develop that, but it's something I'd be very interested.
Yeah.
Since I see you as an institution that really has moved on the public
I think there's an interesting the partnerships are very diverse in these six beacons. For instance, the Manchester one involves a number of Manchester universities, Salford, Manchester Metropolitan, and Manchester University. Now, if you look at the website of each of these three institutions, and how they present their involvement in the partnership. It's completely different. You've got to go down all the web pages and so on the Manchester University website to find any reference to the beacons and their role in it and so on. While on Manchester Metropolitan University, you've got really the impression that they are the leaders and they are the ones that are completely in charge of the beacons, because they emphasize their centrality. I mean, they've got this concept of public good institution at the heart of their strategy, by the way, in Manchester Metropolitan. And hence, they see this as part of them being in Manchester, the university that that cares about the public and so on. So they've taken really the agenda forward, while Manchester University, along the line of what I was describing earlier, is a university that just follows, in the sense that they've got to be involved and to be seen. They can't afford not to be. But at the same time, it can be in conflict with their strategy, their international strategy, the sort of recruitment and of staff and students that they target and so on. And it's interesting, in relation to a discussion I had with Mike earlier, that in the UK, my impression is that the most renowned and universities, the more research-led universities and so on, have yet to fully accept the idea that a radical rhetoric of engagement is not detrimental to an elitist recruitment. While if you take, for instance, the University of Philadelphia, I was taking this example, and their community engagement webpage is extraordinary. I mean, it's a university that has taken over failing schools in the area and so on. I mean, it's been contributing so much to regeneration. And when we, I mean, you read this, it's such a radical discourse of what they mean by engagement. I mean, they're not scared to use terms such as active citizenship and blah, blah. So there's a very strong rhetoric, and yet it's an Ivy League institution with the fees we know and so on. So and it's interesting that for the moment in the UK, there seems to be a contradiction between being world-class and playing on the international scene and being seen as doing things locally and being completely engaged with local communities for free and these kind of things. And that's very interesting in the sort of reluctance of the University of Manchester to be seen as a key player, I feel, in the beacons, for instance.
Your analysis is very interesting. I feel a certain discomfort. You did not engage with this agenda as well as you might have done.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I must say that, just to make a comment myself, I mean, we see other examples around the world of just like the University of Philadelphia. We have someone here with us at the moment from Helsinki City, where it's a natural thing for exchanges between Helsinki City and the University of Helsinki, and the University of Helsinki is pretty high up in those international league tables in the 30s. But there seems to be no contradiction there. In Finland, certainly, where, of course, the public sector is enormous, of course, and the universities are seen as being of benefit for the public sector. And I've said myself in discussions we've had here, we are of the place where we are, and it would seem illogical not to be engaging with these places. Otherwise, why aren't we relocating to somewhere else in the world if we're working in a quasi-market?
Hmm.
Which, of course, some Australian universities do and no longer call themselves Australian universities. They're international universities who happen to have a campus in Melbourne, not your university, I should say, but have another one in Italy and another one elsewhere. And I guess some of you will know which university I'm talking about. So yes, that's enough of my rhetoric. Has anyone else got any comments? Yes, Bill.
Hi, Jack. Could I just get some feedback from you on, it's a bit, maybe going on a slightly rambling question and more a comment, but in terms of the implication for policy from this study or the whole spectrum of what you looked at. And let me differentiate straight away from, I suppose, Scottish example from the English example, and maybe policy as expressed through the funding councils, and therein lies the difference, where the Scottish funding council is much more the instrument of the Scottish government than is the English Higher Education Funding Council, which is much more a constitutional check to the politicians. Now, there's quite a lot of debate, some of it frivolous, some of it fairly populist, but it's actually daily in the Scottish press and media about not just the engagement of universities, but the purpose of universities, to the extent that there are too many of them doing too many things and these graduates are weak, poor, and all of that nonsense is flying around. But more seriously, the Funding Council recently in Scotland tried to get an economic measure of the impact of the engagement of universities. And it created a sort of bilateralism where the ancients and the established, more established universities immediately put clear water between themselves and that level of expectation. Because clearly, as soon as they were seen as the panacea for economic salvation, they were going to get the blame for not achieving it. And they realised that very quickly. Whereas some of the others seem to embrace the agenda and into their titles, or their branding comes, places of useful learning, places of professional engagement. So my question really is, you know, well, there is almost this fiscal attempt to rebrand by the Funding Council and refund universities and say, okay, if you do these things, then we will fund you better.
Uh-huh.
What do you think is going to be the implication for policy nationally of this, of these case studies?
Uh-huh. Well, of these particular case studies, it would be really difficult to say. I mean, they are just four case studies, and it's more... I think the impact initiative overall, the nine projects, could be of more policy relevance altogether. I think our contribution to this is more into the non-economic impact of universities. And obviously, this is the most difficult bit to assess. The economic impact, I think they've been already fairly well... I mean, there have been projects and developing tools much more elaborate than ours. And in fact, even projects like your project and so on have been developing tools to understand the relationship between universities and their regional environment and to look at the economic impact and so on. So this is fairly well documented, I think. And it's not, I mean, I don't think it's really an area that... where the impact of university is contested, I think. I mean, from the interviews and so on, it seems that everybody is really pleased to have universities around. And in fact, it's quite difficult in interviews, and very often it takes a bit of time for people to go into more critical discourses about the local universities. Because for many councils, city councils and so on, the presence of universities is very crucial economically, and people are all very conscious of that and so on. So they will all emphasize immediately, oh yes, they know exactly what it brings to have students around, to have all these people economically. They are major employers, they contribute to reskilling the region and so on. People have data at hand to illustrate that. So I think it's an area where the policy is already quite convinced of the importance of local universities and so on. So that's why we felt that it was interesting to look a bit beyond that and to explore the more non-economic, and that's where we see our contribution to the impact initiative overall. I think the main message we're trying to convey is not only that it's difficult, it's different from one case to another and so on, but it's also that it's an area where universities, for all sorts of reasons, may have reasons to minimize their impact or to maximize, to making more or less visible, depending on what other strategies, depending on what their other strategies are, and I think that this is quite important because, as we can see, in some cases universities will tend to minimize their role and their non-economic contribution, while we know that they are doing quite a lot. But they don't want to insist on that because it's not part of something. So when it comes to mapping non-economic impact, for instance, which policy would have been, policies would have been much more interested in an attempt at mapping things across the region and so on, it's almost impossible for the moment. I don't think we've got tools to map these sorts of impact because we would rely on what universities are communicating about this. And there are so many stakes around this communication that they tend to disseminate contradictory information about what they do locally, if you see what I mean. And that's why I think it's difficult. But I think it was important to highlight this reality and to relate their involvement locally to the nature of their funding, for instance, and their capacity to be proper interlocutor with local policy bodies rather than to just always follow the schemes, as we see with one or two cases here, where universities have no choice but to be involved in schemes that are decided by the funding council or by the government.
Follow that up briefly, sort of split question. To the extent that you show this rich diversity, the different examples within the case studies, to what extent do you think government will, or the agencies on behalf of government, will tolerate that diversity and will say, well, wait a minute, we want the good practice uniformly spread, and will start to be insistent about certain types of behaviour, institutional behaviour?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, related to that, once they decide that, they will then decide the measures by which universities will be reporting. They will no longer trust the autonomous data.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to an extent, they've already been there. But
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure to share your views about governments wanting to have a uniform provision or type of institutional frameworks and so on, because I think that everybody is aware that different type of universities are serving different type of purposes locally. They recruit different type of students. And we know that some universities are serving as sort of SAS. They are the institution, for instance, where the widening participation strategy of the government have really developed, and the others have continued to recruit in a more elitist way and so on. So I think the multiple structure of the HE system is serving its purpose even in policy terms. So I'm not sure that, or is it different what you were?
I don't know. Let me caricature, but I don't think it's a distortion of what's being said in the Scottish sector, in the Scottish media today. Is the characterization of the spectrum of universities is between good universities and widening access universities, which are seen as bad universities because of the types of programs they offer. Now, I simply repeat what's in the media. Phone-ins at 9 o'clock this morning, should we have these types of degrees? Now, hugely influential in getting people in, getting people into employment, but derided in the media.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, to be fair, that case is the argument that the administration at the moment was provoked by an employer's organization.
Yes.
Many degrees are rubbish, and we don't want to
recruit. It's, yeah, I mean, if it's the sort of...
about the future of higher education, and as the Scottish government is trying to reform the schools, it says, well, you're going to need to spend less time in university if you're better educated at school. There's this kind of fierce debate going on at the moment. I think we're going to be in danger, really, of not recognising the very good diverse institutions that we have developed. I mean, in Scotland there are some examples of let's take an example in my own field of life sciences, where Dundee University is a world-class university, rather unexpectedly, but through a group of brilliant people who drove a very focused agenda over 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of diversity is really quite valuable. I think that the economic linking issue in Scotland, and I think this is where we've got such a muddle in our politicians at the moment, is that we haven't the industrial base to take advantage of the skills of the university. I think this is one of the big issues. I mean, Scotland is one of the best centres in the world for life science research, but we don't have a major pharmaceutical company in Scotland, and most of the ideas are harvested off. Now, you probably won't have had time to read the Royal Society's report yesterday about science in the next century, or this continuing in this century. But the university that's probably celebrating most from it is Cambridge, because it's highlighted some incredible examples of economic developments driven out of Cambridge. For example, monoclonal antibodies, for example, chip technology. And they associate this with vast numbers of jobs and vast economic sort of impact. But it says that we almost lost all of this because the government in this case that it's blaming is actually the Thatcher government, pointed the finger at various institutions in Cambridge that were not delivering any investment, any industry. For example, the monoclonal antibody case is taken where, in fact, the MRC derives nearly £300 million a year from the proceeds of the sell-off of the two monoclonal antibody companies that were sold just 3 years ago now. But it took 30 years to deliver that. I think we're in a mess, because I think the politicians don't understand the long-term nature of these impacts, and if we really straitjacket the system and have a very few universities, I mean, we'd be going back to the situation of 30 years ago when we had roughly 20 research-intensive universities in the UK, and we've grown another 100, basically. Some of them are very good. Some of them, I think, alas, are not good at training the sorts of people that we need to train. But if we stay in our own city, there's an example of a university, Glasgow Caledonian, that has found itself a wonderful niche in training allied health professionals. It does it in a seriously good way, and it's internationally competitive at that. And I think, you know, one needs to have universities doing that. I mean, I'll be frank, the University of Glasgow was not interested in going in that direction. I think probably wisely we concentrated on having us at Laetitia's Medical School, but the economy needs all of these highly trained people, and so that institution is doing that. But where we're failing, we're training very few engineers, unfortunately, because we can't get kids to study engineering. We've got the capability to train them, but virtually all engineers we're recruiting are having to buy in full group. And this is a disaster. How we change that around, I don't know.
Universities are not training enough engineers because they're not engineers coming through, or students with the mathematical basis don't want to get engineering. I think there's another issue, which is partly an aside, but I think it also is germane to the broad thrust of what you've been talking about, in that a large part of the contribution of very engaged universities, very embedded universities, is they're dealing with areas of deprivation and failure that have happened elsewhere and earlier in the educational system. And if I want to appeal to the Scottish politicians, all politicians, is to get real and forget the mythology. The Scottish education system is failing students, it's failing employers, it's failing society. Kids are coming out of school at age 16 with less skills than they entered at age 5. They're more antisocial. and I don't know, we've managed to get this social deprivation out of our schooling system. We've de-skilled students in particular ways. So a large part of the college or the 16 to 18 provision in Scotland is compensating for failures that have become explicit at age 16. Mm-hmm. A large part of the activity of certain universities is dealing with students who at the earlier point of undergraduate courses are unfit fully for purpose. And I think we have to, and some of the universities which are selecting universities can afford to say, we just won't take those students for two reasons. One, they're not good enough. And secondly, if we take them, they'll be at risk.